Hi, I'm Nora Cavani, and this is Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, your trusted source on child gut health, brought to you by Alba Health, live on the UK Health Radio. Thousands of studies now link a child's gut health to common symptoms like colic, constipation, and eczema, as well as to long-term health risks like allergies, asthma, and obesity. In each episode, I speak with global experts and scientists to explore the latest research on children's nutrition, gut health, and well-being. Let's dive into the science. Did you know that what your child eats now can affect the risk of allergy, eczema, and asthma for life? This episode is very personal for me because I grew up with pollen allergy, asthma, and severe eczema on most of my body. And these conditions often go together, and they can restrict your life a lot. But there is a lot of research showing that your lifestyle choices and in the first years of your child's life can help reduce the risk of such conditions. I'm your host, Nora Cavani, and today we're diving into how gut health and nutrition from pregnancy to early childhood affect the risk of allergy, eczema, and asthma. I'm so excited to have here Michelle Henning with us today. Michelle is a certified nutrition and health coach, parenting coach, and the author of Grow Healthy Babies, the evidence-based guide to a healthy pregnancy and reducing your child's risk of asthma, eczema, and allergy. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you for having me.
It's fantastic to have you on this episode. And I would say let's get started on why did you decide to work in this area and to write this book?
You know, So I grew up, my father was a chef. I told you, we had a restaurant, we had a fish shop. So I had this early exposure to just loving food and being really passionate about that. And then when I was about 11, my own mother was diagnosed with an autoimmune disease. And this really impacted our family. You know, she had to step back a lot of things that she used to do for me. And I really felt that. And then her brother also had the same condition, and then someone else. And we started to question, why is this happening, you know, in one family? And I think in high school, I was studying nutrition as just part of one of the modules. And I fell in love with this. And I became so consumed with the idea that there was this impact between our lifestyle and diet, which I hadn't really connected before then. You know, I hadn't really made that association. So after school, and then later in life, when I studied nutrition, and then I met my husband, and he had severe asthma, eczema, he had an egg allergy, hay fever. And then I also had allergies and asthma and eczema. And we wanted to have a child. And then it became, I suppose, this sort of a mission of what could we learn that we could do to prevent passing this on. I didn't want the horror stories of what I'd heard from him, where his parents had to hold his hands down at night. You know, his parents had to wrap his hands in cloth to try stop him scratching himself as a baby, and the crying and the lack of sleep. And I thought, this is horrific. No parent should have to endure this. I mean, early parenthood is difficult enough. And then going through this where your child is crying, trying to scratch themselves till they bleed, the scarring left behind. And we were so determined. We went through every research paper we could get access to. We trawled them. And then we put together our own protocol of like what I was going to do during pregnancy. I followed it as best I could. And then we had our daughter. And then afterwards, my husband thought, well, this is crazy. There is no book on this. There is no guide on how to stop this. We should do something about that, and we should write a book. So that became a really important mission. And I mean, her whole childhood now, she's nearly 11, has been, how can I keep, you know, making sure that her immune system stays in balance, that she can still avoid these issues. Hopefully, you know, that we can get her through without ending up with sort of severe asthma or eczema or anything. So that's been our goal all along.
That's fantastic. And yes, as you say, especially having parents with allergies can give a higher likelihood for the child.
Was it 75% increased risk because both of us came with these issues? So we were not like super optimistic. We thought, well, maybe if we can just have less eczema, or maybe we can have a low, like maybe she just has an occasional wheeze rather than needing an inhaler all the time. So our goal was even just to reduce the symptoms and hopefully prevent them. And I gotta say, I mean, we're really lucky. I think so far she's had nothing, you know, so far. Say touch wood. It's good. It's 11 years. You know, she hasn't had any rashes, any eczema, any asthma, nothing. It's so far so good.
That's phenomenal. I think many will be interested to know your protocol. And for this book, you reviewed over 700 scientific publications. That's massive work. It seems like there are a lot of studies out there. What do you think the state of knowledge is right now?
I was reading so much about this actually over the weekend, about how long have we been curious about this, and the interest in learning about this and applying even bacteria to the skin for eczema goes back more than 100 years. I think there's always been this curiosity about bacteria and its role in our health. And only then, now we're able to really understand the scientific reasons for this. And now we know the importance of the education of the immune system at birth and how critical this time window is. So now we know all of the things that they suspected for years. So now we have a wealth of information on this. So we can really take action.
And in your book, you focus a lot on the first 1,000 days of life. So going from pregnancy to the first years of life of the child. Why is this time so important?
What's fascinating to me is that there's, I suppose, this concept, okay, you're pregnant, now you can kind of just eat what you want and like indulge the cravings and just not think about it. But I'm thinking, when we're training for a sports event or a marathon, we will put in training hours, we will eat carefully to meet our protein needs, to meet, you know, a lot of criteria. And I think pregnancy needs to kind of be brought back to what are the needs for the growing child outside of just those basic, but how do we influence the development? Because we now know that the mother's gut microbiome releases these metabolites, so the short chain fatty acids, as you know, and these impact epigenetic changes. Now, what that means is we're kind of born with a genetic predisposition, but it can be changed. You can turn the volume up and down on these. So say that in the case of my own child, we started her off with a bad card. You know, she had to play a bad deck of cards, and we were able to sort of shuffle that with the choices that we made so that she got a better choice out of that. So we're turning down the volume on the genes that we don't want, and we're turning up the volume on the genes we do want to work. So that's what epigenetic changes are, and diet is one of the biggest influences on that. We have so much influence and power that I wish everybody knew that. And what we've found fascinating is that studies have shown that even just tiny shifts in your diet can make a huge change. So it doesn't have to be a dramatic, you know, eating everything perfect. It's about just shifting that needle in the direction of a better, more gut-friendly diet.
And that is important at all times in life. Would you say it's even more important in those first years? And why is that?
Yeah, I mean, this is when the programming is kind of starting. It's like this early life education and training. I know in the book we call it like a police academy. You're trying to train like who they should attack and who was like innocent and who was guilty. So you're trying to look at the immune system. In that early life, it's trying to decide what is safe and what is unsafe. And when a child's exposure leads them to sort of choose like, oh, eggs are unsafe, this is what we don't want to happen. We want the immune system to learn early through the exposure to beneficial bacteria that this is safe, eggs are safe, trees are safe, flowers are safe. This is all fine. And we don't want it to sort of switch into a hyperactive mode where it starts firing at innocent things, whether it's, you know, a peanut. So this early time is that window This is when this decision gets made in the body. And this is why we want to just use this tiny opportunity to focus as much energy as we can on making some choices. And then later, your life's going to be easier. So it's not like it's going to have to be as extreme. So early we say like no sugar, no sweets, avoiding ultra processed food in those early stages, and like trying to breastfeed, and if not, you know, making sure the formula has prebiotics. So you're looking for different things that can help you. And then hopefully, let's say like my daughter, I mean, we were baking cookies over Easter. I'm not stressing about avoiding cookies, but I would have avoided them in those early months.
And this process, and let's say the lifestyle choices that an expecting mother is taking or parents are taking, what could they affect in the child?
Whether your child is going to develop allergies, asthma, eczema, we know that there's also a window for neurological development that we now know is difficult to fully reverse. So then you kind of feel like you're chasing yourself. Like say in my case where I have these allergies, you know, like you, Laura, and then we now have to manage them.
Yeah.
And we do everything we can, but I'm not able to deviate as much as I would like, because then I'm going to pay a price. So now I have to kind of stay in my lane, keep, you know, focusing, making sure I have enough good fiber, sticking within. And if I deviate too much, then suddenly I might get a skin rash on my neck. Whereas my daughter, who had a better start, can deviate more. You know, if there's a party, it's not really a big deal.
Exactly. As if I can chip in here, it's the same for me. Now I had very severe eczema. I don't have those symptoms anymore, but I need to be very strict on what I eat. So of course, if you can have a better immune system that doesn't react to all of these harmless substances, that's even better, and that's even stronger. If we go back a bit to pregnancy, why is nutrition so important in that time? What happens in that time?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
So in pregnancy, you're laying down the foundation. I mean, you're building your child block by block, if you think about it, cell by cell. So everything matters, whether it's your magnesium intake, your calcium intake for their bones, for their nerves. Omega fats play such an important role in brain development. And then they're also taking care of your gut microbiome, which, like I explained, then makes these byproducts, these short-chain fatty acids. And then they have an influence on epigenetic changes. So your decisions, so every plate can kind of shift the balance in a more positive way. You can look at your dinner and say, okay, today I'm tired. I'm going to have pasta. Okay, maybe I have a jar of artichokes. Okay, great. I'll just throw those in. Maybe I'll put some parsley on top. Great, you know, and it doesn't have to be that you can't have a bowl of pasta, but you have to think, what can I add to shift this balance? And maybe I can just also have an apple or an orange alongside this. I had a craving. I had wild cravings for oranges and for tomatoes and cheese when I was pregnant. I have no idea why, but that was for my... I couldn't get enough of them.
What are the most important principles to follow when it comes to food during pregnancy? What would you say are the most important ones?
I would think, like I said, every time you're looking at your plate, say, can I add one more thing, one extra fiber? What can I add? Is it a piece of fruit? Have I been eating a lot of bananas lately? Okay, maybe I can have an apple, or maybe there's a kiwi. Is there something else to reach this sort of diversity? And what can I add to this plate that's going to add another layer of either polyphenols, so some more color, or more fiber? Maybe there's one thing. Maybe I'm having yogurt and fruit. Can I sprinkle some hemp seeds? Or can I, you know, is there something else that I can add to this just to take it one level up and give me a little bit extra? So you can still look at the meals that you love. Let's just say spaghetti bolognese, because I love doing this. And I feed it to all my kids' friends. And so we have like minced meat, but I also put in a box of lentils. I also grate in a whole zucchini. And then I'm also adding in some, you know, of course, you've got the tomato. And then you've got herbs. There's so much going on that it's actually such a comforting but nourishing bowl, rather than if I just had mince and spaghetti.
Yeah. So adding a lot of things and adding fiber and diverse fiber. Is there anything that should be avoided or reduced?
Ideally, we do know that the more ultra processed foods, the greater the risk of health issues. And we know it's not just about what it's replacing, it's also the mechanisms of this ultra processed food, because they contain ingredients often like maltodextrin, which we know actually damage the gut lining. And we really don't want that to happen, because there's enough pressure on your body during pregnancy. So we're trying to think, how can I treat myself gently? So if you're looking again, how can I keep it simple but still have more whole foods? And trying to avoid ultra processed. And like I said, okay, I want pasta. Okay, I'll get the whole grain pasta this time. Or, you know, like I said, I'll just pour maybe, you know, beans or lentils or something through that I know. We make a dish. Again, like, so, you know, I have an 11-year-old and she likes comfort food too. So my husband makes a gnocchi dish, but he also puts in lentils and he puts in kale and he puts in all sorts of things. And then it becomes just this wonderful dish that's nourishing and also so comforting, and also feels like, yeah, she's still getting her kind of pasta hit that she might want. And it's not about depriving yourself or having to eat foods you don't like. It's trying to find a version of what you love that's also going to nourish you.
That's fantastic. That's a super good tip. Are there any alternatives to sugar? Sugar is something that most of us crave. Are there some healthier versions of that?
I don't have anything against sugar in small amounts. Like, I think that sugar is sugar, and I don't stress about whether it's, you know, coconut sugar. I like coconut sugar for its flavor, for example. I think that what we know, that the less you eat, the less you crave, because your gut bacteria play a huge role in your cravings. So we know that if you're able to cut it down and switch it to fruit, when you feel like you have a craving, try and get, maybe there's something that you really love, like blend up some frozen fruit so it feels like a sorbet to get that hit. You know, sometimes we just want that, or some chocolate, you know, dark chocolate. I mean, I make all sorts of things. I think I make like chocolate hummus, you know, like a chocolate spread with chickpeas, so that I blend in, you know, chickpeas, dates, peanut butter, and then a little bit of maple syrup and salt. It's really good. So it's like a chocolate spread, but it's also supporting my gut. I mix melted chocolate with silken tofu. We make like a pudding, or you can blend frozen avocado and banana and then some cocoa powder. And these can be really good if you just want to hit the spot, but you're like, I just want to avoid the junk food. But like I said, we made cookies this weekend, and it was just a very basic flour, sugar, butter, just butter cookies. We actually added matcha powder so they were green, and then beetroot powder to make flowers on them. So we wanted to have this kind of spring feel. And I think that like when it's home baked like this, these are not the foods that are going to do you harm. I think you compare it to a supermarket cookie that has all sorts of emulsifiers and things that we know damage the gut. So if you can, say, just bake your own cookies, something simple with three ingredients like those butter cookies, just keep it simple.
Fantastic. Very good tips. And I tried your chocolate spread, so I can say it's delicious.
Did you?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm hooked on that.
And so after pregnancy, there's a very important event, which is birth, possibly the most important event. But it seems that it could also affect some health risks later in life. Why is that? And what happens?
So what happens in these early stages? So when you are born, you are exposed to the environment. And what is that environment like? You know, are you in a hospital? I had a home birth because where I had my daughter, it was normal. 30% of births were at home. So it was a very normal thing to do. So that's just the option that we took at the time. It wasn't planned. So in my case, my daughter was exposed to our home environment. And if you have a C-section or a vaginal birth, each thing will alter the kind of bacterial exposure. Ideally, you're hoping for a vaginal birth, because we know that then there is a different inoculation, you know, of bacteria. But with C-sections, it's better to choose something that's going to save the life of a child. We can't, you know, we need C-sections. So then you're thinking, okay, what can I do? Now they're trying different methods of swabbing, like a vaginal swab, seeding, this early exposure. And then you say, okay, well, I had a C-section. Can I breastfeed? This is something else we know exposes so much beneficial bacteria, but also the food that feeds the bacteria. And I know a lot and care a lot about this topic. And this is so important. So, okay, maybe that's not possible. Okay, what can I do? Okay, then I'm choosing a formula. Okay, I'm going to check the ingredients. Does it have prebiotics? Does it have, you know, what kind of fats are in it? So you're always kind of looking, where am I at? What are my choices? And how can I just choose the one that's going to turn the needle?
Exactly. And it's important to say that, yes, C-section can save lives. And it's absolutely important. And also many people ask us, well, if I had a C-section, does it mean that my child will have asthma? That's not how it works. We're talking about risk, and it's all an addition. So it's a sum of your genetic predisposition and certain events and your lifestyle choices and epigenetics, as we say. Would you say it's the correct way to see it?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
the station that makes you feel good.
Everything leads to the needle shifting, and it's not one thing. It's never one thing. You know, it's never going to be. So are you in a city? Are you in the countryside? Do you have pets? Do you not? You know, or do you have siblings? You know, what kind of, is your house really sterile? Are you, you know, are you using a lot of antibacterial products in the house, or are you using something that's more gentle? There are many, many factors. And I think that's super important to remember. So one thing is not going to shift the needle fully over. You've got to say, like I said, okay, that's where I'm at. What can I do now to just balance it a bit? What are my choices? You know, like with my daughter was born with genetic predisposition. Okay, so her needle was pointing really far one way. So we had to just shift it the other way. Maybe someone else isn't going to be starting life with that risk. So they're going to take their choices based on their own circumstances. And I have one story that's, I think, really important to show this. There was a child a friend of mine had as a client. This child was early teens, struggling with behavioral issues. I mean, wildly antisocial behavior, out all night. This is really struggling. The parents didn't eat any healthy food, nothing, really picky eater. So they said, start with the foods that they're eating and make them homemade. Okay, he loves pizza, make it homemade. At least then he's getting sort of cheese, tomato, and like a flour. And then hot chocolate, loved, made homemade. So whole milk, cocoa powder, sugar. And then he just took one supplement just to boost his. Within 2 weeks, this child had reduced their antisocial behavior by 70% and was going to bed at 8 o'clock every night. And I think this is such an important reminder. So even though things are going in the wrong direction that you feel, it's never, ever lost. And it's and tiny changes can shift that needle. So like I said, if you have a C-section, if you can't breastfeed, forget about it. What can you do? That's what you focus on.
Exactly. And so one of the things that you mentioned can restore the gut microbiome or improve the gut microbiome after a C-section, you mentioned it's breastfeeding. Why is it so important?
Breastfeeding comes with the bacteria that we know helps to educate the immune system and the prebiotics to feed this specific bacteria to help it grow and thrive. We know that this bifidobacteria play a very important role in the early stages of life. And breast milk just comes ready prepared. It is, I mean, it has all of these other factors with immune sharing. There are many other benefits because I found that it was a lifesaver. So though every time my child was exposed to an illness, we shared our immune system. She would breastfeed. I would share my antibodies with her through the breast milk. And then she would find it easier to fight infections. So she struggled less with infections. So we had less time when she was sick and she was able to recover faster because she was able to share my immune system, which helped her to just get over things faster. So there was so many advantages, whether it's the bacterial exposure or sharing the immune system. So if you can, it's going to make your life easier.
What would you say breastfeeding mothers could do to gain this knowledge and to prepare for this?
There are courses that you can do beforehand. I mean, we can also, I mean, the woman that I went to in the Netherlands has a website with this method, this Concord method. I also have it in my book. I have an example. And she shared that with us willingly. She wants everybody to feel comfortable, to feel happy, and to achieve breastfeeding if that's their goal. And to not feel like they have to give up because of this. And to know that even if nipple shields fail, even if somebody tells you no, try some other people. Reach out to La Lèche League. Reach out to somebody locally. It can be fine. Like, we were 6 weeks in before she latched. So, like, don't give up hope. And she was fine, you know, on the pumped milk until then. But I was really relieved afterwards when I was able to just breastfeed and not pump anymore. it was a relief. But hang in there. Look for the resources. If you can do a breastfeeding course before you have your child, if you can reach out to somebody like Myrta, you know, she's available. There are many people. And then there are resources on her website and also in my book.
This is a great story. Thanks so much for sharing that. And we hear sometimes that some breastfeeding mothers are told that after 6 months of breastfeeding, it's not important to breastfeed anymore, or it's not required, or they should stop. Is that true?
No, it's wild. I don't even know where they're plucking that from, because like I said, it's not just... So our breast milk adapts as our child grows. Our breast milk adapts whether it's day or night. If it's nighttime, it produces more melatonin to help your child sleep. If it's, you know, it, there's also, if you laugh, so if you want your child to sleep, you can watch a comedy and your breast milk will make more melatonin. The more you laugh, the more melatonin, then the more sleepy your child will be. Like, it's a permission to sit and binge out on comedies while you're breastfeeding your kid, is that you will produce more. If you, like, it's tailored differently to a male baby and a female baby. It's so adaptable. It changes all the time. And I think when kids also reach toddlerhood, like when they're like over that 6 month period and they're interacting with other kids, they're exposed to infections, this is going to be a miracle. It's so helpful, like I said, to support their immune system against infections. So you can end up just getting a little runny nose and a cold rather than getting a chest infection and then needing antibiotics. So there's so many factors why you can continue and how much beneficial effects for you and your child, because we know it also reduces the risk of breast cancer. So there are effects for everybody that are going to benefit.
Yeah, that is very fascinating and very, very important. And also it affects, again, it lowers the risk of allergy and eczema and asthma as well to continue breastfeeding. And there's another very important event, which is the introduction of solid foods, or process, let's say, not an event, which is the introduction of solid foods. Why is it so important?
So research has shown that the early exposure to food kind of sets down food habits for a lifetime. We now know that this early exposure can help develop tastes and behavior towards food for a long time. So think of this as, again, a window of opportunity to nurture a situation where your child loves vegetables, loves, and this is not even thinking about what the nourishment is doing. So we know that the more vegetables, the more fiber, the more whole grains, beneficial fats, all of these things are going to feed your child and nourish their brain development, their physical development. But we also know that it's laying down habits. So start with vegetables and try and stay away from pouches unless you really need them for traveling. Try to just steam a sweet potato or mash a banana, or, you know, and you can follow so many resources now with great recipes, and just batch cook and try and just share the food that you're eating, but without the salt.
And can this process also influence the risk of allergies in some way?
Yeah, this is like, again, you are nourishing your child's gut. You are laying the foundation for an immune system that is calming rather than overreacting. And ultimately, allergies, autoimmune conditions, asthma, it's an overreaction from the immune system. It is responding in a way that sees these normal things as a threat. So we need to always keep a balance in the gut, so that it doesn't overreact. And the gut is like the alarm system. It's keeping everything in a kind of balanced state so that you can safely interact with flowers, grass. You know, like you said, like having to stay in during like hay fever season as a child. You know, if we can avoid that, we know what makes a difference. We know that, like, even when you have an IgE reaction, so this like allergic reaction, we know from research that lactobacillus can even reduce that. And we get that from yogurt, plain yogurt. So just thinking about this, early foods helps to keep dampening down any kind of overreaction from the immune system.
That's so fascinating. It's really, really interesting how food can affect different reactions that we have and even allergies. And for kids, introducing foods is also, some years ago or back when I was a child, they used to say that we shouldn't be exposed to certain foods, or maybe women, pregnant women should avoid certain foods, or children should avoid certain foods. What's the view today?
Yeah, we thought that was the best approach, was to avoid peanuts, I think, in particular, was a really one. They were afraid that early exposure to the protein might kind of increase risk, but now we know otherwise. We want early exposure. So in the first stages of weaning, you want to give little tasters of peanut and other foods, and just to try and get these foods in early, because now we know through research that early exposure actually helps to reduce the risk of allergies. So you want to keep, which is why variety is critical in these early stages. That's why I say, think about everything. Think about feeding your kid as just fun, you know? Be excited about, I can't wait to see what they think of this food. I can't wait to see what they think of this food, and how fun it is for you to share foods and foods that you love with your kid. Think about, oh, let's try almonds. Let's try, you know, a little bit of almond flour, a little bit of, you know, peanut butter, and get them in early and have fun with them. You know, really, your child needs to explore. So a part of weaning that's critical is getting messy and exploring food. So don't be afraid of that. You know, lay it out on their tray, let them mush it in their hands and just play with it. You know, that's a really, really important stage.
Some kids don't want certain foods, so they don't want to try new foods. What's your best advice for that?
Yeah, it's absolutely normal. Your child is doing exactly what they're supposed to. Absolutely fine. Expect that. Expect that your kid is going to say, no thanks. Or expect that they're going to react to bitter flavors. Expect that they're going to be nervous. We now know that children decide whether a food is safe or not based on your reaction. So if you seem hesitant, they pick up on that. They're looking at your face rather than the food often. So you got to think about it. You got to go in there with just an attitude of expect them not to like it. Expect them to be apprehensive, but to persist, because we know that multiple exposures are what are necessary. And sometimes it can be 30 exposures before a child will give something a try. So if you get them to just taste something, you're winning, you know, and just keep offering. We know for sure from research now that children will eat what they're exposed to. And you can know for sure that a child will never eat a food that they never are exposed to.
Yes. And you mentioned earlier that this is also the time where kids develop their sense of taste and what they like and what they don't like. So it seems to be an investment, really, to take care of nutrition in this time. What else can nutrition affect in this time?
I mean, in the early stages, we know in the early life, in this first 1,000 days, we know that brain development is also impacted hugely. This is quite recently discovered. They've established, because they've taken in factors, they've looked at all of the other factors, and they now know that there is also a window for brain development. So you have your immune development and your brain development in this time. So you're laying down the foundations, which could influence later in life, mental health, I mean, behavior, neurological condition. We now know that this is a critical time period that we are able to dramatically influence.
Fantastic. It seems that nutrition and gut health in this time is really, really important. I mean, both for the health of the child and of the mother in that specific moment, but also for life. And it can have consequences later in life. So thank you so much, Michelle, for sharing your knowledge and for highlighting this important topic. It's extremely important and very important for any parent to know. If our listeners want to learn more about this topic and about you and read your book, where can they find you?
So I have a book called Grow Healthy Babies. And I also have a website called Grow Happy Kids, because I also work with, like I said, the interaction with nutrition and mental health. So from all the early stages from pregnancy all the way up to childhood.
Fantastic. And there, I think they can also learn more, get the contacts from your lactation consultant that you mentioned. Yeah. There's also a lot of tips on recipes. It's a lot of information. I read the book and I loved it. So there's a lot of resources also on the website to learn more about this topic and get practical tips. Thank you so much, Michelle. It was fantastic to have you.
Thank you for having me. And if anybody wants to reach out to me, if they have any questions, please do just send me an email or find me on Instagram and I will respond.
I'm Nora Cavani and thank you for joining me on Healthy Gut, Healthy Kids, live on UK Health Radio. This episode was brought to you by Alba Health. We analyze your child's gut health, provide personalized nutrition plans and coaching for the best start in life. We are the first and only company with a large clinical study on child gut health, and our team counts over 1,600 scientific publications in this topic. We translate this complex science into simple, personalized actions for families. Thanks for listening and see you next time.